You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Tour de France in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today, we are in Foix.
Allons enfants de la patrie, le jour de gloire.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Francois Thomazeau.
Hi there.
Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And we were played in there by a blast of La Marseillaise.
Well, it's only right, isn't it? It's Bastille Day and there's been a French winner on the Tour de France. I've not seen Francois grin quite so much as you have this evening. Is that because of Barguil's win or because the restaurant we've booked this evening is more than half decent?
It's a little bit of both, I guess. Yeah, no, I'm very happy for Warren. I mean, I've never been a chauvinistic sports fan. You know, my teenage sports heroes were very varied nationalities. It's always got a little bit on my nerves, you know, this what we call cocorico, you know, that's when a Frenchman wins, like the French cock rooster, you know, rises and sings. But no, but Warren is a very nice guy. He's a great rider. I mean, you know, obviously would be Pédaleur de Charme, and on top of it, he came so close the last time against Rigoberto Urán after leading almost all day, spending all day in the front. Really, he deserved that win. So yeah, a great moment for cycling, you know, not only for France.
Well, we'll get to the big news, the Pédaleur de Charme competition, later in the episode. If you listen all the way to the end, there might be a special treat for you as well, as Francois promised to play us out
by singing it.
Absolutely.
Well,
before any of that, Lionel, what are you looking confused about?
Well, where are we?
Oh, where are we?
We're on the pitch near the dugout at Foix Rugby Club. I don't know whether Foix is a very good rugby club. It looks quite a small little stadium here.
Yeah, it's well, actually, it's not a great rugby club as such, but the region, the Ariège, is a very, you know, traditional rugby region. And you've got lots of French international coming from Ariège. And there's lots of clubs in the area. Pamiers, Foix, they all have been in the first division. Saint-Giron, they've all been
Montauban,
in the first division.
We pass near.
Yeah, well, Montauban is not in Ariège. It's not too far, but it's... So, it's really in the heartland of French rugby.
Now, Lionel, can we get on to the tail of the attack, please?
Okay, well, it was stage 13 from Saint-Giron to Foix, 101 kilometres with three first category climbs. And the winner of the day, Warren Barguil of Team Sunweb, was more or less the first attacker. He and Tommy Vokler went clear as soon as the race left the neutralised zone. There was a lot of aggression early on and all sorts of riders got up the road. Philippe Gilbert was one, Sylvain Chavanel was another. Alessandro De Marchi of BMC Racing was up the road at one point. Almost immediately, Jakob Fuglsang of Astana was in difficulty and losing ground, could barely hold on to the handlebars, and in fact was riding uphill no-handed at times, presumably because the pain in his arm and his elbow was such. He didn't make it to the finish, though. Fuglsang, who started yesterday in fifth place overall, is now out of the race. And then the race for the GC really hotted up, didn't it, with Mikel Landa of Sky and Alberto Contador going clear and gaining quite a lead. Landa didn't quite become the Maillot Jaune Virtuel. He was a few seconds short of that, but he certainly did enough to, well, potentially put himself into a podium position by the end of today. There was a counter move behind that which had Nairo Quintana in it. Mikhail Kwiatkowski of Sky marked that. Alexis Vuillemoz of AG2R was in it. By this stage, Barguil had come back to that group. And so we had, for a long time, Landa and Contador looking very impressive, being chased by that quartet. And then, we'll discuss the tactics that Team Sky played in the second half of the stage, because they really brought the Landa group back under control. When it came to the finish, there was this group away, and the run into town here was, it's exciting, sensational. It all hinged on that big right-hand corner at the end, which Barguil took wide and fast, whereas everyone else kind of went in the middle or on the inside, and that really was the difference. So Barguil won the stage on Bastille Day for France, making amends for that very narrow defeat in Chambéry. As I said, Fuglsang has abandoned, as has Arthur Vichot of FDJ, so they are down to four riders.
Yeah, you know the joke that was running in the French camp here? One guy said there are more Maggio brothers than riders in that team now.
Not quite, but a good day overall for the French, because a fourth French stage win in this race and a first French Victor and Bastille day since David Moncoutier in Digne-les-Bains in 2005. That's where it was. Just another little bit of housekeeping from this morning. Rigoberto Urán, who was penalised 20 seconds, as was George Bennett and Serge Powers, for feeding or taking a water bottle in the last 10 kilometres of yesterday's stage, they had those 20 seconds reinstated. So Urán was back to within 35 seconds of Fabio Aru's lead before he'd even finished breakfast. The jury's reasoning for that was because there was so much congestion with team cars and what have you that the riders were unable to take bottles before the 10 kilometres to go mark. So overall, Fabio Aru still in yellow by 6 seconds from Froome. Mikel Landa's moved up to fifth. Dan Martin gained a few seconds. Nairo Quintana gained some time. Contador's back into the top 10. And George Bennett was probably one of the losers of the day, really, because he lost almost, certainly over 2 minutes to Aru and slips to 11th.
Well, it was a stage. It lived up to its billing, didn't it? As the firecracker of this year's 201 kilometres. Full gas. We spoke last night about a similar stage in 2011 where Alberto Contador was the man to light it up, and he was again today. You know, he's not been in the greatest form, but love him or hate him, Contador, you know, can really make these stages extremely exciting by riding in the way that he did today.
Yeah, we kind of buried Alberto since the start of the tour. Saying, I mean, I was going to the finish line with Lionel. We were walking past the cemetery, and I said, "Oh, you know, some riders may end up in here." And I wasn't thinking at the time of Alberto Contador, but even if in the last couple of days he gave the impression he was not the Contador of old, the legs might not be exactly the same as they were, but the head and the will is still there. And today he had the will. Came a little bit short, finished third in the stage, but he was there again. And I talked to his team director, Steven De Jong, about, you know, tactics of the day, the reason why he went, and well, here is what he had to say. Steven, another proof that Alberto is never finished.
He's got a very good mentality for doing the race, and in hunger of success, he can do great things, even when he's injured like this.
It was a planned move this morning. He said he told you, "I'm going today."
He said, "If I feel good, I'm going to be in the group in the front. I will be there." So,
and the results, you're a little bit of frustration in the end.
Well, it looked all quite good until the last climb, and then when Barguil and Quintana came across, then of course we knew it was going to be very difficult for the stage win. But I think he showed great mentality, and I think he's an example for a lot of other riders.
There's another week in the Tour, so we could see Alberto again.
For sure.
I think I said on the eve of the Tour that Contador, even if he was out of it, would have an impact on the race, and he did. He has had an impact on the race. He was a great companion for Mikel Landa. I'm sure Team Sky were happy as well. Though we'll get to talk about Team Sky's tactics in part two. It was just a thrilling stage. It had it all. It had intrigue behind as well. You know, we were trying to figure out that climb, a long way from the climb down to the finish in Foix, 26 kilometres, steep climb. And it was odd to sort of study the body language, because Dan Martin sat in the front setting a very ferocious pace for quite a while in the saddle. Then Froome attacked, and Martin was the first guy to fall out the back. It was almost as if Martin dropped himself. But as he explained, I think, to you, Lionel, that was the way that he had to ride.
Well, yeah, this was what Dan Martin said at the finish line.
I was just looking for opportunities, you know, on the steep climb. I was, because of my back, I can't make any accelerations, you know, so I can't really get out of the saddle. So I just thought, ride a hard tempo and then nobody can attack, you know. And I think it kind of worked until just before the summit. And I think it's mission accomplished for me today, to be honest. I mean, gaining time is just a huge bonus. Like, I couldn't, yeah. It was just, I thought they might hesitate and let me go because I'm a little bit further down on GC. And, you know, a few seconds here, a few seconds there. It's nice, especially with my injuries at the moment. So. Yeah, every day we're getting better. I felt like so much better today than yesterday, you know. So hopefully it will continue like that, and we'll yeah, we'll get there. From the start, I never set goals in races, you know. I just race my bike and do my best, and then if I'm better than the others, I'll win. Yeah, it's exactly what everybody expected, you know. Yeah, they're in a very good position, even better now, I think. I don't know if Fabio kept the jersey or not, but yeah, obviously everybody sees Astana as a weaker team. Today, yeah, Fabio was quite isolated, so yeah, Sky got strength in numbers, so of course they're going to take advantage of that. Today's just a really hard day on the bike, you know, you can't tell. It's so different to yesterday. It's just all out all day, and yeah, I think everybody's going to be happy that's over.
So yeah, Dan Martin still suffering the effects of that crash, the one that ruled Richie Porte out of the Tour. Well, Richie Porte went straight into him, didn't he, on the descent on the run into Chambéry on Sunday. And Dan Martin has been exceptional, considering, you know, he might not be in 100% the best one, you know, the best condition at the moment. But he was making the point really there that he was riding in the saddle because he can't get out of the saddle because of the pain in his back. And so it stands to reason that he would ride on the climb at his pace and, you know, give himself the easiest possible ride. And then once they got over the top, he then gained a little bit of time, got away with Simon Yates, and, you know, they worked very well on the way down. And you know, he's just chipping away, isn't he? And if he keeps doing that, and if he manages to recover physically before the big Alp stages, you know, you wouldn't rule him out for the podium.
He'd be within 30 seconds of the yellow jersey now if he hadn't had that crash. Yeah, which, you know, he'd be right in there. And the way he's riding, it's a very un-Dan Martin-like way of riding tempo like that on the front, because normally we see him, you know, jumping clear, attacking, and it must be frustrating for him not to be able to ride the way that he likes to ride. But he did, as you say, clipped off at the, towards the end and got away with Simon Yates. I was kind of surprised that they let him go, because he's still right up there. But it was fascinating. Froome looked like he was struggling a little bit when Dan Martin was on the front. Then he launched an attack, but we've seen that before. It's so hard to read Froome because he doesn't look great on the bike even when he is going well.
That's what. Maybe there was the kind of small disappointed point of today's stage. We're expecting lots of action, and there was a lot of action. But if you take into account the race for the GC, actually the guys who were in top three, top four, top five kind of neutralized themselves. And actually the finish, I was talking to Romain Bardet, and he was really frustrated. No, you could have expected him to be happy, because after all, you know, he won a stage yesterday, another French win today. He's still, you know, in the top three overall, so everything should be okay. And actually he was frustrated. He said he didn't understand how some teams were riding, because he said yesterday and the days before we managed to reduce the number of contenders for victory in Paris to 4 or 5, and now because we played a waiting game at the back, we brought back two or three riders into the game, and now there's about 7 or 8 riders still in contention for Paris. He said, "I hope we won't have to regret in Paris," and he seemed to. You know, to complain that some teams played a strange game, maybe were not attacking enough. Or I guess he was frustrated by actually the team sky plan, which was quite a well-crafted one, actually, with a man in the front, so you don't have to chase, another guy in the second bunch, and then Froome ready to move, you know, to and throw, attacking, test his rivals. Actually, I guess probably what Bardi was frustrated about was his own team's tactics, because they didn't do much. Alexis Villamoz went in the second group but couldn't hold. Everything was in this
Pierre
stage.
Tours started to look a bit fragile as well. He got dropped today. And Landa's right back in it overall now. But Nairo Quintana as well has crept a little bit closer. You know, might have put his worst days behind him.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned Team Sky, Francois. I mean, I thought their plan was really good. I mean, it was bold. They didn't really turn the screw at the end when perhaps they could have done, but we don't know exactly how strong Landa was feeling towards the end. The gap was coming down a bit, wasn't it, before Kwiatkowski and Froome then reeled it in a bit more. So, yeah, they'd been out there racing very hard from the off.
Hi, I'm Matt Dewar. I'm a manager in the Rafa Clubhouse in Chicago, and you are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa.
The Rafa Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you very much to our sponsor, Rafa. A reminder that you can buy our clothing at rafa.cc. We understand the jerseys have temporarily sold out, the cycling jerseys, but we're finding out what's happened to them. They should be available soon. What's up, Lionel? What are you looking at?
Well, I'm actually just looking at a picture of some cassoulet from the restaurant Francois has booked for this evening. But that wasn't what I was looking for. I was looking for...
I just saw this excited look in your eyes. We did run our... Overnight, we ran our poll to find this week's Pedaler de Charme. Despite some subtle campaigning for Juan Alfredo, no favouritism at all here. The winner, the runaway winner, was Rigoberto Urán with 42% of 2,753 votes. Second was Warren Barguil, and Juan Alfredo and Mikhail Kwiatkowski bringing up the rear with 19% each. So doesn't say much for our subtle campaigning.
Well, Richard, our audience has grown so much during this Tour de France. We've probably got quite a lot of new listeners. Hello, new listeners. Explain what the Pedaler de Charme is. It's a prize that I think Daniel came up with this idea. Daniel Freeb?
Didn't.
No?
I came up with it.
Was it your idea?
Yeah, but the name Pedaler de Charme applies to the Hugo Cobley, the Swiss rider from the 1950s, who rode with a comb and a bottle of eau de cologne in his pocket and was very stylish and elegant.
And so from whenever, was it the 2013 tour, the first tour we covered as a cycling podcast, we had a random Pedaler de Charme every few days. It's now become a weekly award with the illustrious Rafa t-shirt being presented to the winning rider each week. But yes, it's the essence of the award is not just giving a bidon to a child. I'm going to say that no longer qualifies you for a nomination, nor just winning a stage. It's got to be something that just summons up the kind of the romance and charm of cycling.
Think about a haircut, you know? I mean,
yeah, I mean, it can be just for how a rider looks. It can be for elegance. It can be for class. Style.
George Bennett's shoes designed
George
by his girlfriend.
Bennett's shoes,
perhaps.
Actually. Yeah, his shoes designed
not
by
sure
his
about a haircut, though, but
he's got good hair, thick head of hair. But Urán is as a runaway winner. His team, Canadel Drapac, actually tweeted their support, which I think probably helped him. The other teams, I mean, Wanty seemed to just be happy to have their man in the break in the four. Kwiatkowski, Sky, I mean, they're all about Chris Froome, aren't they? Team Sky probably didn't really care that Kwiatkowski was in the final four.
I think he deserves a place because I think his sunglasses really suit him. A lot of riders wear those sunglasses, but they, for some reason, they just look better on Kwiatkowski than on anyone else. So I shall allow that one.
Anyway, we'll go and find Urán and present him with his T-shirt. Now, before we had a little pause there, Lionel, you were talking about Team Sky's tactics today. Opinion very divided on whether... I'll tell you... It is just opinion. That's all it is, because we don't know really how the race is going to pan out, and the decisions taken by the team itself are they have a better idea than we do about who's better placed to win the Tour, Froome or Landa. And obviously Froome has won three. It reminds me but Landa's just such an interesting sort of maverick, and there is this, we saw it at the end of the stage yesterday, this sense that Landa was riding his own race a little bit towards the end. Froome cracked a bit on the final climb to the finish, and Landa was clearly very strong, despite having set the pace on the climb. And there's just this sense with him that he is not your kind of typical Sky rider, in the sense that he's not
a Sky bot.
He's
he?
Got personal ambition, but we saw this 2 years ago at the Giro as well, when he was at Astana, when he was running with Fabio Aru, and I think they finished second and third in the race overall. Alberto Contador won it, but there was this real, again, Landa was not happy. He certainly on that occasion Aru was the favourite son, and he was being relegated and used in a different way. And you do get the sense here, and he does have personal ambition. And Sky, the Tour de France with Chris Froome in the team, is not these are not the perfect circumstances for him to give full vent to his talent, I suppose.
How long can you afford to be number two? I mean, you know, he was number two or three or whatever with Astana. They had Nibali and Aru at the time. He's now number two or three for Team Sky. And from what he showed today and yesterday, he probably has the means to be number one somewhere. Probably Movistar, as we know, he's probably already signed for Movistar next season. But even at Movistar, I mean, the Quintana will still be there. Valverde is not retired yet. I don't know. Probably his choices of teams have been a little bit, well, maybe motivated more by financial reasons than personal ambition. But you can tell, you could tell in the media scrum today, you know, when I, as we do every day, when I joined the scrum to have a couple of quotes from him. How could I say? His speech, his commands were really in the diplomatic mode more than in the personal mode. So I don't know what to think. I don't know what he thinks. We'll see.
He told Spanish radio apparently tonight that he has the legs and the will to win the tour, but not the officer's stripes. His place in the pecking order is very, very clear. It's what not didn't surprise me at all, but what struck me that might have been a smarter move by Sky was to really let the other teams think that Landa was their man, that they were actually backing him once he was in that move. But instead, it was Kwiatkowski and Froome who did quite a lot to keep the gap down and to stop it going up enough for him to take the yellow jersey.
Well, yeah, but I don't think the gap ever got quite big enough to allow Sky to play that game, really. If it had got to, say, 4 minutes, I think it would have looked very different, because Landa would then have been yellow jersey on the road, and Sky really could then have sort of sat up and said, well, it's up to everybody else, and they could have...
He was about 5 seconds away from being yellow jersey on the road at one point.
Yeah, but that was only 2 minutes 55, wasn't it? So three, you know, another, I think another minute might have tipped the balance ever so slightly in favour of Landa just being allowed to ride away and see, you know, see where they end up.
I think what came across was that Sky were anxious that his lead didn't grow that much, because if he was in yellow jersey by the end of the day with a minute as advantage, they would have had to kind of ride for him.
My impression is that they're playing the penalty shootout there. They're looking for a draw between Landa and Froome, knowing that in Marseille and in the final time trial, Chris Froome will win it by at least a minute and a half over Landa. So actually, by having two riders up there, they're forcing the other teams to chase and you know, to be offensive, aggressive, to try to... It's much more difficult to fight two guys than one, and at the end of the day, they will never probably leave Landa too much ahead of Froome, but try to for a kind of a, you know, stalemate between them, and then decide the race on the final TT.
Absolutely, because the critical thing was that Froome's time gaps to the other riders, Bardet and Aru in particular, didn't change, and really that didn't change this afternoon. So I think you know, they were hedging their bets a little
exactly
bit.
Like 2012, though, doesn't it?
Well, it does. I mean, it's ironic, really, because, you know, Landa has been far more impressive these last 2 days than Froome has looked. You know, even though Froome made that move on the steeper part of the Mur de Pagel at the end, you know, Landa looked absolutely in control of the Tour de France today. I mean, even compared to Contador, he looked better. He looked more comfortable. He spent longer on the front than Contador. And, you know, I really do think that Francois, you're right. If Landa could have moved up another two places and into sort of third place overall, and then be in that group with Aru and Bardet and Arran, then Sky's hand would be massively stronger than it is even tonight. I think their hand is strengthened, but we shall have to see what happens. You know, there's another little lull in the GC, unless something incredible happens in the hilly stages, which I can't really see happening. But I think they played a blinder today. And I'm very critical of Sky sometimes with their kind of robotic style of racing. You can't take away from them anything today, because they put everything on the line. They tried something different. It was exciting to watch. They didn't just sit back. The easiest thing to do would just have been to leave Landa sitting, you know, just behind Chris Froome there to do some chasing and pacing on the final part of the climb. And they didn't do that.
I agree. That's the good news about Team Sky. Yesterday, they rode the typical Team Sky stage. It didn't work. And for once, they showed they could change their tactics a bit, not lead the way, but they played it like Movistar used to do. It's actually Movistar tactic to have a guy in every group and to wait and see. And if the leader is in trouble, yeah, you have the man in front, you know, just easing down a bit to wait for him. I mean, they actually used other teams' tactics much better than the original. So today, yeah, hats off to Team Sky.
I agree that their tactics certainly helped make the stage as exciting as it was. At the finish, I spoke to Nicolas Portal and Dave Brailsford. You, Francois, spoke to Mikel Landa. Let's hear from all three of them now. First Landa, then Portal, then Brailsford.
We all thought that Contador was going to attack today. It looked as though you thought he was going to attack today and you had a perfect plan for it.
Yeah, I think he was a nice wheel to follow. He attacked. Yeah, he is very good rider, no? In those kind of stages, short, very explosive. So I follow him and then we work very well together.
At one point today, did you think you were riding into the yellow jersey?
I thought about it, but always knowing that it was very difficult.
And yesterday at this time, after the stage, you seemed a bit frustrated, upset maybe. You're much happier today.
No, yesterday also I feel happy. No, we did, all the team, we did a nice job. And yeah, it's true that I couldn't try to win the stage, but sometimes you must look more for the team, no, than for you. And we are here to try the win with Chris. Chris has won 3 last tour and his best version is coming. Yeah, but we have also one hard week coming, no, with a time trial, and I think he can do it better than me.
It's an entertaining day. Would it have been a good day to have had Landa in yellow at the end of today? Was that the plan?
Well, why not? Why not? The goal of the day was to try don't lose time first and try to play also the card that we have. And also Mikel is strong, super strong. And a stage like this, you know, it's really important to try to put the right person on the breakaway. And the plan was to try to put all Kiato or Mikel Niebe. And then when the big guys move, Landa, and it was perfect. So we have the both right on the breakaway. And then it was all about trying to see what Chris can do on the last climb, you know. And we never tried to help anyone, just like stay calm. And I think we are pretty happy, yeah. Mikel move up on GC, is now 1 minute, I'm not sure. So it's just perfect for us. You know, if something happens again, we can really put pressure again more.
I mean, Landa looks as strong as anybody in this race. Can he become a contender to win it?
Oh, he can become a contender to win it. You can see he's stronger. He's super strong. We still, you know, focused on Froome, but that opened the cards for us really well. So we played. I think we played the right card today. And yeah, finger crossed.
Great, good day. I think, you know, exciting. The thing we like about bike racing is trying to race to win rather than trying to race not to lose, as it were. And we find ourselves quite a lot in that situation, trying to race sort of not to lose. We thought when we came into this race, really, that it would be a bit more of a tighter race. We knew that with the course, it was going to be a bit more opportunistic. And so I think it's quite good fun, actually, to be in a situation where you think, OK, we're still 6 seconds down, and we've got a time trial to come. If it stays as it is at the minute, we'd back ourselves for the win. But equally, it's very, very tight. So I think the question for us is, when we sit and think about we've got one of the strongest teams here, how do you use the team to go on and put pressure on the other teams as against just defend? And that's a lot more fun, if I'm honest. and that's what we saw today. So, you know, I think Landa's strong enough and in good enough condition to be perceived as a genuine threat by the others. And I think if he's close enough and strong enough, then tactically that makes all the difference. I'm very, very happy that he got away. And it was good to see Contador and Quintana back in front. You know, they're the big names of the sport, aren't they? You know, and a break like that is good to see.
Dave, it's interesting you use the word perceived there. Perceived to be a genuine threat. Is he not a genuine threat?
He has to be perceived by his components, not me. I'll clarify that. If for any GC, you know, two guys on GC to really work, if you send somebody up the road, the other GC leaders have to genuinely feel the threat that guy can win. Otherwise, it doesn't work, obviously. So that's why I think he has that status.
Ultimately, though, with him having ridden the Giro, do you feel that Froome, he came into the race as your leader, that Froome is in a better position to win the race?
He's 6 seconds off the lead, so he's in a better position. There's no doubt about that at the minute. But on the other hand, I think as soon as he crashed at the Giro, backed him right off for a good couple of days, focused on the Stelvio stage and said, OK, we'll wait and we'll try and win that. And he nearly did, and then he went again the next day, and of course then eventually won his stage. And then we decided, okay, well, let's try and keep the mountains jersey. But actually, he didn't race the whole of the Giro full, So I think he was fairly fresh when he came out of it, and he managed himself well in between the two races, and so he's here, and I think he's in good shape. He's long, Mikel. You know, he's like long, isn't he? You know, the
pace that he can hold over a long stage is his strength, and we've seen it in you know, on the stages that he's won. We saw it in Estelvio, and that is why I think on days like today he makes a break. He can take it all away, and that's his big strength.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for continuing to sponsor the Cycling Podcast. You can get 20% off at scienceandsport.com by entering the code CPOD20 at the checkout. And a reminder that Science in Sport are running an amazing Tour de France competition with prizes worth over £15,000, including one massive prize of £500 of Science and Sport product, signed jerseys, a Pinarello Dogma F10 bike, and an all-expenses-paid training camp experience for you and a friend with Team Sky in Mallorca. Go to scienceandsport.com/thecyclingpodcast and enter the competition.
Well, as we're in Foix, I'm thinking of taking a little sample of cassoulet back home and giving it to the Science in Sport scientists so they can make me my personalised batch of cassoulet-flavoured gels for the winter.
That's a great idea, Lionel. We heard before the break from three people from Team Sky, Mikel Landa, Nicolas Portal, Sports Director, and Team Principal Dave Brailsford. And I think, you know, I asked Brailsford about that idea that Landa was a decoy. And I think it was obvious to everyone that he was a decoy. It's still very much Froome's team, like it was Bradley Wiggins' team in 2012, ironically. And I don't know, I just think that sent out a message to the other teams that they didn't have to panic about Landa being up the road, that Sky were not going to let it get too big. And I think a stronger ploy would have been, imagine at the end of tonight, Landa in yellow jersey by a minute, Froome in third at a minute and a bit. He's still the favourite to win the Tour overall. But you've got Landa in such a strong position that the other teams would then have to be trying to get the like jersey back off Landa.
The gap never got big enough for that to be on the cards, and that's before.
Partly it
didn't go over the threshold.
Yeah, but partly that's because of the work that Froome and Kwiatkowski were doing behind.
Well, mostly it was because Team UAE
and Nieve before he went.
Team UAE Emirates did a lot of chasing, and there's been speculation. I asked Chiro, you know, does this mean that Fabio Aru is going to Team UAE next year? I mean, they've got Louis Menkes, who's, you know, vying for a place in the top 10. It was odd that they put two bodies on the line to keep that gap down. Yeah. But the bottom line here is that Astana, but to quote a well-known team principal, Astana are as weak as bleep.
Who said that?
Well, a well-known team principal said that this evening.
All right, okay. But Astana plus UAE.
Well, Astana are in all sorts of bother. I mean, Fuglsang would have been a great ally. Obviously, not injured, he wouldn't. But
so would Cataldo.
So would Cataldo. I mean, their two best riders are out of the race. The rest are strong kind of work horses. They'll be fine tomorrow and Sunday, but then they're not going to be doing much in the proper Alps, and certainly not on the Izoard stage, which is really difficult. So Fabio Aru, he's in that yellow jersey, but he is really alone.
Yeah, I was thinking yesterday by seeing, you know, Team Sky doing all the work. I had the impression that Astana were actually holding back, you know, to save strength for today. But actually, they were not saving their energy. They just didn't have any, you know. So, yes, it's a little bit worrying for Fabio Aru. He rides well. He's an intelligent rider. He's strong. I can't see him being very seriously dropped. But being on your own is a real trouble, as you know.
Well, and his Grand Tour record is good. I mean, very good.
It is good, yeah.
You know, he knows how to last the distance. He knows how to survive the toughest mountain stages.
Right.
And he can attack.
But can he win against the whole of Team Sky, AG2R? You were mentioning other teams. I mean, there are other teams with ambitions there.
But he doesn't need to win against the whole team, does he? Because ultimately, on the Izoard, it'll come down to Bardet, Froome, Aru, Uran. We haven't mentioned Uran.
We haven't.
Uran's a quiet man, isn't he? And a strong time trialist. And a well-known team principal is a little bit worried about Uran, a rider this well-known team, Riz, will know as well, because Iran, of all of them, is also a very strong time trialist.
And he's got round mountainous Giros in, you know, second place a couple of times, I think.
Once for Team Sky.
Yeah, he's, and with his 20 seconds reinstated, you know, that puts four of them really close together, and you know that can go either way, can't it? When the attacks start happening in the Alps.
His only limitation, I think, Uran, is that he never wins. he always finishes second in the big races, for good or bad reasons. But
he did all right in Chambéry.
Won the biggest stage of the tour a few days ago.
That's right. But many, very, very, very often, he came very close. To win. Really big races. You mentioned the Giro. There were the Olympics. I mean, there are a couple of races in which they looked absolutely designed for him, and he finished. He was so often doing well and finishing in second or third.
Talking
place.
Of the Olympics,
Lombardy as well. Last year.
There were rumors at one stage when he started with Quick Step, with many teams. There was even rumors that winning was not his main priority.
Well,
obviously this has changed, but you know. Winning is a habit to be taken.
He's had two massive wins in the last week. He's won a big stage of the Tour de France and Pedler de Charme.
That's right.
Also, he's got a very strong ally in Alexander Vinokourov, the Astana boss. Remember the 2012 Olympics, and Iran accidentally looked the wrong way in the sprint, and Vinokourov won the gold medal. Payback can sometimes come many years down the line. Who knows? Speculation corner of conspiracy theory corner.
Speaking of conspiracy theories, we didn't spent a lot of time on it last night, because the footage that we'd seen at that point wasn't as clear as some that we saw later on. But the whole incident of the bottles, we've been giving Francois a bit of a hard time.
Where
clearly a massive French conspiracy.
The cycling podcast leads with the water challenge, the water feature, and then the Tour de France catches up about a week later with the water feature. Somebody on Twitter did say, which was quite funny, that they reversed the decision because the water that was given to Uran and Bennett was Contrex.
Which is, if that's the case, of course, you know, only should they be reinstated, they should be given 20 seconds bonus.
That would be such a French thing, wouldn't it, if Bardi spat it out because it was Contrex. Fantastic. But no, Francois, you did point out that the chief commissar at the centre of a lot of these controversial decisions is actually Belgian.
He is Belgian. Philippe Marin is Belgian. He has no reason to favour a French rider. And what's probably more important, and that some of our listeners don't realise, is that the jury of commissaires, they're not on Twitter watching videos sent by Twittos. They're actually in the race. You have several commissaire cars, and they see things, they note things, they report things, and it's only based on the reports by the commissaires on the race that the jury, the commissaire, make a decision. So actually, if they didn't sanction Bardet, it was for a very simple reason. They didn't see it. You know?
Well, this is really interesting because obviously, you know, all sports are, you know, we've moved into an era where television scrutiny, you know, there's an eye everywhere. People are always, you know, able to. I mean, in fact, we did it the other day with the little, when Chris Froome lost his balance and edged towards Fabio Aru. I mean, you know, once something's been captured and put on social media and then, you know, everybody's seen it, you're absolutely right, Francois. The referee is what counts. And, you know, I think of the golf tournament. I think it was the women's US Open. I could be wrong. But the woman that was leading the tournament, the ball had moved as she'd addressed it or, you know, whatever it was. And somebody watching on TV basically called in and notified the rules officials, and they penalised her. And there was a real hoo-ha. I mean, we, again, talking about sort of precedents being set, we either have a system where the only penalties are the ones handed out by the jury, or we have a system where absolutely everybody who's watching the Tour de France is bringing these things to attention. And I felt some sympathy for Jonathan Vaughter's argument when he pointed out that it did appear that Bardet had also taken a bottle of water from a roadside spectator.
Bardet did take a bottle of water.
He did. But did he drink it?
And he did drink it. There's very clearly he did drink it. Some people are equating this to sort of cheating. See the overreaction to it. Now, there could be many reasons why the commissars missed that.
Well, let's talk. The rule is in place, really, on to prevent cars being in the race
It's a daft rule when you apply it to roadside spectators handing out bottles. And riders must be desperate for a drink if they're going to take a swig of water, even contracts from a roadside spectator. I mean, it's a daft rule. It's kind of throwback to, you know, the 60s or the 50s when riders were only allowed, you know, two bottles for a stage. That you know, any more was considered to be cheating. You know, taking a swig from a roadside spectator is not cheating. Bardet didn't cheat to win the stage, but inevitably, when they overturned the decision to dock 20 seconds from George Bennett and Rigoberto Urán, it did look like it was to avoid having to dock 20 seconds from Romain Bardet. That's how it looked. Yeah.
No, I think we are at the crossroads of two traditions. The tradition of, because when riders are on small races where you don't have that much TV, you don't have that much tweets, you don't have GoPros or other, you know, cameras embedded, when you don't, well, you know, you don't have the power meters, the GPSs. Now every second of a rider in a race can be scrutinized and analyzed and commented. But the rest of the season, when they are at the Trobriand or the Tour of Turkey, both great races, by the way, but, you know, these guys can pick a bottle and nobody cares. They can, from time to time, you know, hide behind in the slipstream of their cars. It's kind of a habit they take throughout the season. And then all of a sudden during the tour, every single moment of their ride is scrutinized, commented, criticized. I don't know. My opinion on this is that I've always said it's the same with football. Never criticize the referee's decision. If you do that, it's like criticizing the decision of a jury or in a trial. What do we do then? We replace all that by robots or by algorithms,
or by public vote.
In the end, if you can also replace riders by e-riders, and you won't have any doping, you won't have any controversy, and it will be boring to death.
But the Russians would then hack it and fix the result.
That's right.
I've lost the thread completely. My eye was caught by someone tweeting their condolences over Juan Ofredo's failure to win Pedal de Charme, saying, "Those wishing to support Ofredo anyway should meet tomorrow morning by Richard Moore's Brompton." Thanks, Chuck Wooldridge, for that.
Well, we're winding up, are we? Because it's nearly cassoulet o'clock. But before we go, we just return, I think, to the man of the day, the stage winner, Warren Barguil. Let's hear briefly from Ike Visbeek of Team Sunweb. I started by asking him how much Warren Barguil knew about that final corner into the finish in Foix.
So we study it, and we knew that if you take it too tight, the corner, from the beginning, that you don't have the best line. We won in the same way a stage with Marcel in Poland 2 years ago. Well, we studied the corner really good, and we knew you decide what the good line is. And he did that in a really good way. And he had a good gear, but also a gear that he could finish it off with. So really good.
And after the disappointment in Chambéry, where he thought he'd won and then he hadn't, this makes up for it.
Yeah, I think a deserved win, and really good to see. That was a hard one for us, and especially for him, so close, but this was really nice. Yeah.
But he's been so aggressive the whole race, you know, on the escape, every mountain stage, and then today he goes away almost the first man.
Yeah, that was maybe a little bit too enthusiastic. But yeah, sometimes the brake goes directly, and then you want to do that. But yeah, it was a bit too much energy spent in the beginning, but then he could calm down, and I think he did it really smart in the final.
And lastly, he managed to get up to the leaders just before the top of the climb and then sprinted for the points. He's looking very good for the polka dots on, and here he is on Bastille Day. The celebrations tonight presumably will be, you'll have to keep an eye on them, I guess.
Tomorrow we have an important day, so and he's motivated for that, but I think there will be a little bit more consumption of champagne in France today. Yeah.
I think back to the stage to La Planche des Belles Filles, and something that kind of jarred at the time, and I didn't mention it at the time, but when Barguil was dropped quite early on the climb, he turned to the motorbike, which had the TV camera on, and he waved and smiled and looked, you know,
looked like a whimsical flaneur.
He really did. He really did. And I thought, well, he's obviously not here for GC, which I think we knew anyway, but he lost all that time in order to have a bit of freedom. He's now got a commanding grip on the polka dot jersey, nearly three times the number of points as the second place rider. He can now settle back in and rest and target a stage in the Alps.
He's a GC rider, isn't he, in the long
term?
Yeah, in the long term. You know, he's had a couple of goes at GC and had bad luck and ridden a little bit Alan Zubeldia, perhaps. He's ridden this race in a very exciting way. And you know, he said a couple of months ago, this is how he wanted to rediscover the joy of winning, because he's gone a couple of years without really winning, having won these exciting stages at the Vuelta. And, you know, I think he's done something quite brave, you know, because it's hard for a rider who's billed as a GC rider to opt out and to ride it the way he's done. There are so many riders here who are riding extremely strongly. I mean, Louis Menkes, you know, is riding very, very, very well, and he will no doubt learn a lot. And he also is perhaps a future Grand Tour winner, perhaps Africa's first Grand Tour winner, who knows. But he is riding in a way where he's following.
He'll never win a stage.
Well, he'll not win a stage the way he's riding. You know, Barguil, they might have comparable talents, who knows, but Barguil's riding in a completely different way and providing people with a lot of excitement.
Yeah, and I think, the Team Sunweb boss said this evening he wouldn't be at all surprised if Barguil in the next 2 days puts all his energy into trying to help Michael Matthews win a stage, because Matthews has done him a great turn in the King of the Mountains, you know, competition by snaffling a few points here and there. Matthews, he's had a real tough race, hasn't he? Beaten by Sagan at Longwy, when really Sagan looked absolutely unbeatable and Matthews didn't do anything wrong in that sprint at all. And then in the flat out bunch sprints, he's really not been on the same page as Marcel Kittel. And there was one day in particular when he had a real shocker and wasn't even in the top 10 or 15. But the next two stages could well be made for him. Yeah, we've seen him go in the break.
But beware of Greg Van Avermaet. I mean, he was there very close to the group, the group, yellow jersey group today, until the Mur de Péguerre. So Greg Van Avermaet, Peter Sagan is not there anymore. Greg Van Avermaet in Rodez and in Le Puy-en-Velay will be also, a rider to take into account, obviously. Going back to Team Sunweb, they actually knew what they were doing with Juan Barguil, because remember last year they did exactly the same with Tom Dumoulin. Tom Dumoulin let himself been dropped, won two great stages, and came back a year later to win the Giro. So, we can all only hope that the same applies to Juan Barguil.
You can, certainly, Francois. And on that note, let's play out with La Marseillaise. Come on, Francois.
Okay, I will do it. There's a little bit of public here.
No,
they're Italians. I'm not shy at all. Let's go. Allons enfants de la patrie, le jour de gloire est arrivé. Contre nous de la tyrannie, l'étendard sanglant est levé. L'étendard sanglant est levé. Entendez-vous dans nos campagnes mugir ces féroces soldats qui viennent jusque dans nos bras égorger nos fils et nos compagnes. Aux armes, citoyens, formez vos bataillons, marchons, marchons, qu'un sang impur abreuve nos sillons.
Whoa. This is like being a Francis Dujeux rider, isn't it?